good evening without motivation. And think of the kind of fortitude that bodhisattvas have to keep going, to not get discouraged, to not get sidetracked by stupid things, to not waste their energy getting angry and feeling offended. But let's think of what their fortitude is like to keep their minds focused on the path, focused on their spiritual aspirations, focused on what is most important to them in their own lives. And with that kind of fortitude that is willing to endure hardship, even the hardship that comes from learning about emptiness and realizing emptiness, that strength, that inner strength that bodhisattvas have to keep themselves steady on the path with compassion. And so let's develop that same kind of fortitude and to work for the benefit of all sentient beings, no matter what kind of situations we encounter. I like thinking about bodhisattva's fortitude. It gives me a lot of energy, because it really comes down to developing that inner strength that knows what's important and keeps yourself going towards what's important, and then just doesn't bother with all the fluff, you know. And in that way, when you see so much of what we think every day is fluff, you know, it's like, oh, that person doesn't understand me, or so-and-so doesn't like me, or, you know, I mean, you know how we are every day, yeah. They don't put the dishes away the way the dishes should be put away. Yeah, it's true, they don't. Yeah, and this is really serious business. We should get really upset about it and dictate to them how to put those dishes away. Yeah. And so, you know, just the mind that really is able to stay focused on what's important and leave aside the rest, because it's really very, very inconsequential, isn't it? Yeah, when we think of it, all the stuff that bothers us from day to day is really very inconsequential when you consider the meaning of being in samsara. Yeah, and so when the mind starts to go, oh, I have this problem, so-and-so doesn't like me, nobody listens to me, I'm the abbess and nobody listens to me, they all do the opposite. They even sing a song for my birthday, and then they think, they that's going to make up for it all. Yeah. Oh, same old thing. And then your mind just gets stuck in that. And we waste all of our energy. And it's like, who cares? Yeah, who cares about this stuff? So let's keep our mind focused on what's important and leave aside the rest of it. Yeah, and we'll be a lot happier now. And we'll create a lot better karma for the future. But I have to tell you about It was my birthday today, and these people, you know, they said this and they said that. Some people wish me happy birthday, but then they just, complained about me. Didn't give me, they say, may you have happiness, but then they didn't do what I wanted them to do, and it's so simple if they do it, and they didn't do it. Yeah. Every birthday is like this. Yeah, I should have made a tape every birthday, then play the same tape.
One year you saw His Holiness on your birthday, and you received teachings on Chapter 8.
Oh, yes, that's true. One year.
One good birthday.
Oh. One good birthday, His Holiness, yeah, teaching, equalizing, exchanging self and others. But I was thinking, usually on my birthday, I call my parents and I thank them for having me and for being my parents. And this is the first year when there's no parents to call to thank. Yeah? Okay, shall we go on with Arya Deva?
You're getting all these messages online. Happy birthday, Venerable!
Okay. Okay, are you going to do what I want now? Are you really going to stay awake during this whole teaching and not drink Coke during the teaching? Really? All of a sudden, blank. Okay. So, verse 284. Oh, it starts out perfectly, verse 284. Childish beings are certainly only familiar with that which involves them. That's it, isn't it? Because of unfamiliarity, they fear that which extricates them. Okay, so on a very broad level, we're going to get into how this verse is specifically talking about emptiness. But on a very broad level, this is a very accurate description of childish beings. Childish beings meaning ordinary beings who haven't entered the path. Specifically people who aren't Aryas, but, you know, even more so those who haven't even entered a path. Childish beings are certainly only familiar with that which involves them. And it's true, isn't it? You know, we only focus on me, I, my, and mine. And when it doesn't concern me, who cares? Yeah? Just like, who cares? I can't be bothered. And, and that attitude is really, it's so flippant, and it's so lacking in connection to others, you know, so lacking in compassion. Yeah. And it's not that others aren't connected with us. We aren't connected with them because we're only involved in what directly influences ourselves. Yeah. Okay, so this verse from Arya Deva talks about why childish beings fear emptiness. Because remember last time we were talking about how somebody who doesn't know anything about emptiness isn't afraid of it. Somebody who has realized emptiness directly isn't afraid of it. But somebody who has an inference where it's really starting to affect you, then that's when the fear comes, because you see that you have to, you know, your whole, the whole way you thought you were, the whole basis of what you founded your life upon, your self-identity, is suddenly, you're realizing is totally, you know, wrong. Yeah, and so that creates a sense of fear. Okay, so Joe Blow says, well, why do they fear emptiness? And the answer is because of lack of familiarity. Okay, childish beings are very familiar with self-grasping, very familiar with self-cherishing. They have no previous exposure to teachings about emptiness. you know, no previous exposure to teachings about bodhicitta. So they fear emptiness. Yeah, when they first hear it, you know, they think, no, I, you know, what's going to happen to me? This is scary. Yeah, and so they get quite afraid. So the Aryadevas, so it says, because of unfamiliarity, they fear that which extricates them. So it's because, or childish beings aren't familiar with emptiness, that even they're thrown the life raft, they're afraid of it. Yeah, I mean, the Buddha's throwing this life raft and saying, climb on board and you'll be able to cross the other shore to nirvana. And ordinary beings look at their life raft and go, but that's too scary, I don't want to get on. Simply because they don't know what it is, they're totally unfamiliar. And so that's what's such a tragedy, isn't it? That they're so close, but so far, you know? Somebody may say, oh, think about emptiness. Oh, no. Yeah. Okay, so that's really quite a sad situation. So Aryadeva's advice to us is to give up doctrines that are wrong and non-virtuous. Yeah? So don't hang on to wrong views and wrong doctrines simply because we are used to them and comfortable and familiar with them. Yeah. But really have the courage to challenge how things appear to us. Mm-hmm. That's where we should have some doubt. You know, do things really exist the way they appear to me? That's the kind of doubt we should have. Okay, then 285. If someone who is shrouded in complete ignorance and impedes suchness will not even attain good fortune, what need to mention liberation? So this is about the faults of impeding other people's understanding of emptiness. Okay? So emptiness should be taught to people who have faith and appreciation and a sense of gratitude towards the Buddha. Yeah, people who are receptive, who, you know, who trust the Buddha in some way or another, so that they're willing to hear a new idea that is challenging, okay? Because that's what makes them suitable vessels. You know, somebody who's not a suitable vessel doesn't want to hear any new ideas because it's too threatening to how they've constructed their universe. Yeah? And you can see that sometimes. I mean, of course, it's always easier to see in other people than in ourselves, you know. But it's true, isn't it? Often out of unfamiliarity, it's like, I don't want to go near that. And yet it could be the thing that liberates us. Yeah, it should be, could be something that's quite good. So here, you know, these people who are not suitable vessels are tempted to reject emptiness because they're afraid. Yeah, they're afraid of the implications. They're of, you know, well, who am I if there's no solid I? Yeah? And what's going to happen after death if there's no soul that carries on? And what's the meaning of life if there's no creator that rewards and punishes? Yeah, so they get very afraid. So somebody who has total disregard for emptiness and is shrouded in ignorance and impedes the teaching, hearing, thinking, and meditating about suchness that other people do, you know, maybe they're jealous or, you know, they're out of arrogance or out of meanness. But people who impede, you know, there's a teaching or somebody wants to give a teaching about emptiness and they intercede and they say, no, let's not talk about that. Or somebody's thinking or about emptiness or teaching emptiness, hearing about emptiness, and these people say, oh, that's too dangerous, you know, don't do that. And they're saying that to people who are actually suitable vessels, you know, and they're saying it with an afflicted mind. I'm not talking here about, you know, somebody who out of compassion is telling a person who is entirely new to the Dharma, don't start with thinking about emptiness, that's an advanced teaching. I'm not talking about that, okay? Because that could be good advice for people. You know, start with the basics and then work up to understanding emptiness. But this is, you know, somebody who actually is a suitable vessel being discouraged due to somebody who out of jealousy or meanness or whatever is intervening with the teaching or contemplation of emptiness. So that person who creates those obstacles, they won't have a fortunate rebirth, you know, as a human being or as in the celestial realms, because they're creating so much negativity interfering like this. So for them to even think of attaining liberation is too far out, you know. Somebody who discourages or impedes learning about emptiness like this way, in this way, won't have a good rebirth, let alone liberation. Okay? Because the actions they're doing are pretty serious non-virtues. Okay? So, Gyaltsub Jay says that rejecting dependent arising free from extremes, you know, so the teaching on dependent arising that's free from the extremes of absolutism and nihilism is a more serious non-virtue than killing 100 million people. That rejecting the teachings on emptiness, the rejecting the teachings on dependent arising that is free from the extremes of absolutism and nihilism, rejecting those teachings, is a more serious non-virtue than killing 100 million people. Okay. Now you might say, why? I mean, because killing 100 million people is pretty serious. Okay. So why would rejecting the doctrine of dependent arising and emptiness, you know, and that's free from the two extremes, be more serious than that? Because when we reject dependent arising free from the two extremes, then it means we're going to fall to the extreme of absolutism or the extreme of nihilism. And, you know, somebody who rejects dependent arising in particular is, you know, much more likely to fall to the extreme of nihilism. Because you can see even in the lower Buddhist schools, they accept dependent arising. They don't accept dependent arising free from the two extremes, but at least they accept dependent arising and they accept some kind of selflessness. But people who reject dependent arising free from the two extremes means that they're also rejecting selflessness, emptiness, as well as dependent arising. So they're going to fall to the extreme of nihilism. The extreme of nihilism is very serious because if you have the thought nothing whatsoever exists, because if it's not truly existent, then it doesn't exist at all, then you start thinking, well, then karma, you know, karma doesn't truly exist, so there's no such thing as karma. And the effects of karma don't truly exist, so there's no such thing as the effects of karma. So therefore, I can do whatever I want because there's no ethical dimension to my actions, you know. And anyway, I don't exist, so there's no person who's going to experience the result of this negative karma. So they just throw everything to the wind with this wrong view, and therefore engage in a whole ton of negativity. Yeah? Because I think we all know from our past, don't we? Yeah? Did you ever do this in your past? I don't know about you, but I had a very nihilistic viewpoint at some point in my life. You know, after I decided in college that religion was a bunch of hogwash because all people did was kill each other in the name of God, then I just threw religion out. And I thought, you know, poo. I mean, it wasn't like I thought nothing existed, but I thought, you know, if it feels good, do it. And as long as you don't get caught, it's completely okay. Yeah. And so, you know, I had some sense of a little bit of, you know, not doing really horrible negative actions. But I did a lot of things that I wouldn't normally have done that now I have a lot of regret for. Yeah, because of this kind of nihilistic view of, you know, well, it just doesn't matter. You know, nothing matters. Yeah, and it's so easy to fall into that view. And then, you know, how do we act when we say nothing matters? Well, then we do whatever, you know, our self-centered mind wants. And we wind up creating, you know, a whole ton of negative karma. So that's why this nihilistic view is so, you know, non-virtuous, because it leads us, you know, it acts as a motivating factor to do all sorts of other negativities. Okay? So, you know, we should really kind of take care of this and make sure we don't go to that extreme. And make sure, you know, we may not completely understand emptiness. It's hard understanding emptiness. But to have some kind of faith in it, I mean, even just by checking for ourselves a little bit, you know, who am I? And, you know, well, I can't really find out exactly who I am. Yeah, and then seeing that sometimes that can be a big relief. Yeah, like when somebody criticizes you, instead of feeling, oh, there's a real me that's getting criticized and I have to defend myself, then to ask yourself, well, who's getting criticized? Yeah, is my body getting criticized? My mind getting criticized? What exactly is getting criticized? And then you can't really identify anything. And that kind of helps dissipate the upset from getting criticized. Okay? Okay, so then 286. Lapsing from ethics is preferable to lapsing from the view. Through ethics, one gains a high rebirth. The supreme state is reached by means of the view. Okay? So here, this is about taking care not to lapse from the view of suchness. Okay? So again, denying emptiness is more detrimental to ourselves and to others than a lapse in ethical conduct. Okay? For the reason that I just explained. Okay? So we should really be very careful and never reject the view of emptiness, because while the you know, if we mess up on ethical conduct, I mean, ethical conduct is really important and we need to keep it, you know, but if we mess up on ethical conduct, since the result of ethical conduct is a fortunate rebirth, we just kind of miss out on a fortunate rebirth. But if we mess up on the in terms of cultivating the view, then, you know, we won't attain liberation or awakening, and we also won't even get a fortunate rebirth, because we'll create so much negative karma due to our wrong views. Okay? So it's really important for us to be able to see how emptiness and dependent arising are compatible, how they come to the same point. And so we've heard it before, you know, that emptiness is the meaning of dependent arising and dependent arising is the meaning of emptiness. But really kind of getting into that, and what exactly does that mean? Yeah, because the lower schools say, yes, dependent arising exists. But they say dependent arising is not the meaning of emptiness. They say dependent arising is the meaning of true existence. Yeah? Because, you know, all these things arise dependently, but they have to have some kind of essence, otherwise they wouldn't really exist. That's what the lower schools say. So they use dependent arising as a reason to prove true existence, which shows how completely messed up it is, because it, actually you should, we should use dependent arising as the reason to prove emptiness. That because things arise dependently, they cannot have their own independent essence. Okay? Because dependent arising and independent arising are completely contradictory and mutually exclusive. If something is independent, it cannot be dependent, and vice versa. Yeah? And independent existence is synonymous with inherent existence. Okay, so that means that dependent arising and inherent existence are totally contradictory. Yeah. Why? Well, the definition of inherent existence is that it exists on its own without depending on any other factors. So something can't be dependent if it exists like that. Okay? So the thing is, you know, we talk a lot about dependent arising, dependent arising, dependent arising. But when we look at things, we know here that they're dependent arising. But when we look at them, they look like they have their own nature and they exist from their own side, and we just accept that as true. And we don't even see how the appearance of things contradicts our understanding that they arise depending on causes and conditions, depending on parts, depending on being named and designated. Yeah, we don't even see that as contradictory. Okay? So it's like having a thief in your house and you don't even see the thief. Meanwhile, all your stuff is disappearing. Yeah? We kind of don't put two and two together that this person comes over every day, and after they come over, I'm missing something. Yeah, but we don't put it together that therefore they must be a thief. Yeah. Okay. Then 287. Okay. For the unreceptive, conceptions of a self are best. To teach them selflessness is not. They could go to bad rebirths, while the extraordinary attain peace. Okay, so this is talking about stages leading towards suchness. Okay, so they say that the wise only teach emptiness after carefully examining the student. Okay, so there's another quote in here. I don't know where it's from, but it says, taught to fools, it confuses them and does not further peace. When snakes drink milk, their poison only increases. Okay, so milk is usually something, you know, like in ancient India, is seen as a very pure kind of substance, yeah. But when snakes drink it, it works in the opposite way to increase their afflictions. In the same way, when you have somebody who's really foolish, the pure teachings on emptiness are only going to increase their afflictions. They're not going to make them any wiser. And so for that reason, we don't teach foolish people about emptiness, because they'll only get the wrong idea and create more negative karma about that. Okay? So what he's saying here, when he says, for the unreceptive, conceptions of a self are best. To teach them selflessness is not. So when people are very uneducated in the Dharma, yeah, when they're very fearful about things, then you can see why the Buddha taught that there was a self, because it gives them some sense of security. And even though they believe in that there's a self, then still, based on that belief, they can create good karma. You know, because they may be seeing their actions as inherently, you know, constructive or inherently destructive, which is mistaken, but at least they're interested in doing constructive actions and abandoning destructive ones, which is very good. So anything we can teach them according to their current level of mind that helps them keep good ethical conduct is quite good, you know? And that's why, from a Buddhist viewpoint, we say that it's good that there are many different religions, because that way everybody can find something that suits them. And if somebody really truly understands their own religion in a correct way, then they're going to abandon harming others. And that helps them to, you know, stop creating causes for the lower realm. And if they follow the teachings of whatever religion, they'll learn about forgiveness and kindness and compassion, and that helps them to create virtuous karma. So people who kill in the name of religion, you know, and we have a whole lot of them nowadays from many different religions, yeah, they don't really understand their own religion properly. Yeah, because if you look at the teachings, you know, if you look at any teachings in Judaism or Christianity or Islam or Hinduism or whatever it is, they all talk about ethical conduct, non-harmfulness, love, compassion, forgiveness. You know, they all talk about that. Yeah. And so people who misunderstand, who, you know, in the name of religion kill other people, they say we're the true whatever, but they don't really understand their own faith. Because if they understood their own faith, they wouldn't be acting like that. Yeah? So, so for people with a certain kind of mentality, it's much better, like we say, you know, there's... Follow another religion. If God makes sense to you, follow a religion that teaches God. If that helps you abandon negativities, follow that. That's great. Yeah? Because that is suitable for your mentality. Okay? And so for people like that, who are uneducated in the Dharma, who are very immersed in different kinds of views, like in a view of God or a view of a soul, an Atman, something like that, then if they're not receptive vessels, teaching them about emptiness can make them create a lot of negative karma, because they'll either repudiate the teaching on emptiness and never want to hear it again, or they'll misunderstand it and think it means that nothing exists, which is, well, like we've just been saying, also very, very dangerous. So for these people, you know, you teach them about, it says conceptions of self are best. Okay? So this is also why, you know, if we look in our bodhisattva vows, one of the root bodhisattva vows is teaching emptiness to the unprepared. Okay? And this is why, you know, you don't just go into a crowd of people who are totally new to the Dharma and start talking about emptiness, because you don't know their level of mind and if it's going to benefit them or not. Yeah? So it's really important before that to teach them the earlier stages of the path and give them a good preparation. Unless you have some kind of power whereby you can see that somebody's mind is receptive to emptiness, and this is exactly the time to teach it to them. Okay? So, you know, maybe you talk with somebody a little while, maybe they were studying philosophy in university, so they have maybe some ideas, you know, a flexible kind of mind to think about different ideas, and you know that they're not going to think emptiness means non-existence. Yeah, then maybe that person, you can introduce a few ideas about it. But again, you wouldn't sit down and teach the whole thing before really checking out somebody's level of mind. Okay? And this actually goes for all the Dharma teachings. Yeah? We have to be so sensitive to to where other people are at, and then express the Dharma in a way that is compatible to where they're at. Yeah. So if your family, you know, is deeply immersed in another religion, you don't just kind of go home and say, you know, Mom, Dad, I think what you believe is total trash, and here's why, and then spill it all out. You know, that's not going to help them. Okay? So, you know, I say this because sometimes we get a little bit excited when we learn Buddhism. It's like, I want to turn everybody onto it, and I want to teach everybody about bodhicitta and everybody about, you know, emptiness. But, you know, we have to be sensitive to people's mental states. Yeah? And levels of mind. Okay? Because for some people, having attachment to a self, you know, or grasping at a self, helps them give up bad behavior. And it makes it easier for them to have a good rebirth. So, you know, so don't teach emptiness to those people, because it will ruin their body, speech, and mind, because they'll either reject emptiness or misunderstand it. Okay, so teaching emptiness has advantages and disadvantages. Okay, so that's why we have to have this sensitivity of what to teach to who. And rejecting emptiness through not appreciating it, or rejecting the law of cause and effect because we don't understand emptiness, that leads to an unfortunate rebirth. However, people who are extraordinary, like it says in the verse, okay, it says the last two lines, they would go to bad rebirths, so those are the uneducated people, while the extraordinary attain peace. So peace needs nirvana. So the extraordinary people who, you know, have the capability to understand emptiness, then they can, you know, hear it and take it and run and attain realizations, and therefore attain peace. Yeah. So you see, at the time of the Buddha, you know, it's quite interesting, what, you know, when you read the Pali scriptures, to see what the Buddha says to different people, because it becomes really, really clear that he can see potentials in other people that we can't see. Because there might be somebody that we look at and we say, that person really, you know, they have wrong views and they're really kind of backwards in their behavior and what they're thinking. And yet the Buddha teaches them something and wham, they attain stream entry, which means that they've attained the path of seeing of the hearer vehicle. You know, that, bam, they realized emptiness like that. Yeah. But beforehand, we looked at that person and we said, no, it's just, you know, they don't look like they're so wise or smart. And on the other hand, in the stories, there may be somebody, you know, who is an excellent debater, or somebody who appears very confident, very rich, very educated, and yet, you know, the Buddha won't teach them emptiness at all. Because he knows that, you know, there's too much obscuration in the person's mind to understand it, and they would reject it or misunderstand it. Yeah? Yeah, it's very interesting to look at the stories, you know, and how the Buddha relates to individual people. Very interesting. And I, you know, I watch His Holiness sometimes, and I remember there was one woman one year who showed up, one English woman, who was like very attracted to Vajrayogini practice. She was pretty new to the Dharma, but really liked that practice. Somehow, I have no idea how, she wound up, you know, when His Holiness was teaching this practice to a small group of people in the palace, she took the initiation, took the teachings, left. And I'm going, wait a minute, how did that person get in there to do that? But when there's a lot of other people, you know, who would seem qualified. And then I thought, you know, His Holiness must have seen that there's some kind of karmic seed from the past, you know, and that this was the time to teach her this. Yeah. Whereas, you know, you may see other people who just, oh, yeah, I'm teaching emptiness, I'm teaching Tantra, everybody come, you know, without discriminating people at all. And maybe they don't have that kind of ability that His Holiness has. And as a result, you know, people take Tantric precepts and then don't keep them and accumulate a lot of negativity, or, you know, they hear about emptiness or Tantra and they're not ready yet. Yeah, so it really takes a lot of finesse and skill here. Okay. Then, 288, there is no other door to peace, and it destroys wrong views. That which is the object of all Buddhas is called selflessness. So this verse is about recognizing suchness. Suchness means emptiness here. And recognizing, you know, the fundamental mode of existence. Suchness does not mean emptiness to everybody. Okay? You know, in, for example, in the Tathagarbha teachings found in China and with Dolpopa, suchness isn't the same as emptiness, okay? But in Tsongkhapa's tradition, it is, okay? So when it says there is no other door to peace, yeah, what this means is you must definitely understand emptiness in order to attain liberation of any of the three vehicles. Here, solitary realizer, bodhisattva vehicles. Okay? And so, like I was saying last time, when other people ask me, you know, can people from other religions realize emptiness or attain liberation? I say it depends. If they have the teachings on renunciation and bodhicitta and the correct view of emptiness. Yeah? Because especially that there's no other door that leads us to liberation, no other realization that brings liberation aside from the realization of the emptiness of true existence. Bodhicitta alone does not give us liberation. Yeah? It's that we have to really understand the importance of the realization of emptiness here. Just having love and compassion, you know, does not mean we've realized emptiness. Okay? So we can't cut the root of samsara by any other means. Okay? Not by reciting 100,000 this and that. Not by, you know, having bodhicitta. Not by, you know, developing renunciation. All those things alone by themselves cannot bring liberation. They're, you know, they may be very important steps in the path, but this is really emphasizing that it's only the correct view of emptiness that cuts the ignorance from the root. Okay, so dependent arising's lack of inherent existence is called the fundamental mode of existence. That is beautiful, because in saying dependent arising's lack of inherent existence, what you're saying is dependent arising exists. Yeah? Dependent arising's lack of inherent existence is the fundamental mode of existence. Okay? But just by saying that, you're saying things exist, because you're saying dependent arising. You know, things arise dependent on other factors. Okay, that's beautiful, isn't it? Dependent arising's lack of inherent existence. That is asserting the existence of both truths, conventional truth and ultimate truth. And it's asserting that they are compatible and not contradictory. Yeah, or it's saying that a dependent arising and emptiness are compatible and not contradictory. Actually, conventional truths and ultimate truths are contradictory because nothing can be both of them. Okay? But it's showing that dependent arising and emptiness are not contradictory. Okay. Okay, so emptiness, you know, or the correct view of selflessness, is the object of hearers, solitary realizer arhats, Arya Bodhisattvas and Buddhas, and understanding it destroys the two extremes of absolutism and nihilism. And remember, absolutism, you know, it's also called eternalism, permanence. Those are other synonyms for that extreme. Okay, 289, sorry. The unreceptive are terrified just by its very name. Just by the name emptiness, the unreceptive are terrified. So what so-called strong man is seen who does not frighten the weak? Okay? So if you're a strong, do you ever see a strong person who the weak people are not afraid of? You know, what strong person doesn't instill fear in the weak? Okay, so the analogy is, you know, emptiness is like the strong person. So it's going to instill fear in people who are very naive because they misinterpret it. That's the meaning of this analogy. You get it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? Okay. So why this verse talks about why fear arises in the weak. Okay. So, selflessness should not be taught to the weak-minded because the very word emptiness or selfless terrifies the people who are unreceptive. Yeah? Because, you know, if you go in somewhere to somebody who's very unreceptive and you think, and you say to them, you know, nothing exists the way it appears to your senses. Yeah, that could be really scary to people. You know, what you see does not exist in the way it appears to you. Ah, what exists then? That's very scary for people. Yeah, okay. You know, it's like, you mean I can't trust my senses? Things don't exist the way they appear to me? That's scary. You know, or for somebody who really, you know, has this belief in a soul, a permanent self, and they think, oh, there's something that's really, truly me that never gets destroyed, that goes from life to life. If you go up to that person and say, you know, there is absolutely no soul. There is no you there. That person's going to freak out. Okay? So did I tell you that story that His Holiness told in Hamburg? Yeah.
About the monk?
Yeah, about the monk?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Tell it again?
Oh, yeah, maybe I should tell it again. You haven't. One person remembered it. That's
the donkey story?
So there was, His Holiness told the story when I was in Hamburg. There was one monk from Bihar, India, who I guess was Hindu before, who had a very strong view in the Atman. And he became a Buddhist monk, and one day His Holiness was talking with him about emptiness and, you know, anatman, that there is no Atman. And this monk started trembling. He was so terrified by the idea of there not being an Atman that he was trembling. Yeah. And His Holiness really had to talk to him for some time to calm him down, to help him, you know, see that, you know, it's okay. It's yeah. You can live without that view that, you know, you don't need to think that if there's no soul, that when you die, that this just total darkness, that nothing happens. Because that kind of view is very freaky for people, you know? I mean, my dad was terrified of death because he thought after you die, there's just nothing. Yeah? So if you, you know, that can be so scary for people. Okay, so just as the sight of a lion or tiger frightens animals, emptiness frightens those who, the sound of emptiness frightens, the word emptiness frightens those who grasp at a self. Okay. And then 290. This principle is not taught by Tathagatas for the sake of debate, yet it burns up others' contentions as fire does fuel. Okay? So this verse is saying that the profound view of emptiness is not taught for the sake of argument, but even though it's not taught for the sake of argument, it still burns up wrong views and wrong conceptions. Okay? So Joe Blow says, since this teaching destroys all wrong views, it should be taught to the unreceptive in order to defeat the wrong views of the undeceptive. It should be taught to those people because they're the opponents of emptiness. So we should teach it to them and conquer their wrong views and, you know, and do that. That's what Joe Blow's saying. Okay? And what Aryadeva responds is that the Tathagata didn't teach emptiness to outshine his opponents in debate, okay, but in order to lead them to liberation. And you find this very often, you know, that this whole discussion coming up, because it seems that throughout history some people have said, oh, you talk about emptiness just so you can debate it, you know. You're doing it just to shoot down others' views. That's all you care about, is shooting down others' views. You want to win and be victorious in debate. You know, throughout history, because when you start studying the Indian commentaries, there's a lot of discussion about this. And you know, people saying, oh, Nagarjuna didn't really have a view. All he did was want to criticize other people's views and defeat them in debate. And actually, that's not true at all. Okay, there is a correct view of emptiness. And the Buddha taught it. You know, Buddha didn't teach it just to win debate. I mean, what does the Buddha need to win a debate for? Yeah? He doesn't have any ego to bolst by winning a debate. He taught emptiness for the sake of liberating sentient beings. Okay? So, so even though he didn't teach it for the sake of debate, you know, it does have this side effect of burning up the wrong views of the people who the Buddha debates with. Okay? Just as fire consumes fuel, even though it doesn't have the intention to burn the fuel. Okay? So teaching emptiness isn't having the intention to defeat them in debate, but it has that side effect, even in the similar way to how fire burns fuel, even though fire doesn't have that intention to do that. Okay? So, in Nagarjuna's praise to the perfection of wisdom, he says, like dew on the tip of the grass, when it meets with the rays of the sun, opponents' arguments and errors evaporate when they meet you. Okay? So he's praising the perfection of wisdom, Prajnaparamita. Yeah? So when he says you, it's talking about Prajnaparamita. It's not talking about a person. Like the dew on the tip of the grass, when it meets with the rays of the sun, like Manjushri's rays of wisdom, that, you know, how the correct view illuminates the mind, illuminates the world. Okay? Opponents' arguments and errors evaporate when they meet you, when they encounter the perfection of wisdom. Okay. So, we have a little bit of time for questions, if you have any. Yes?
What is the other view? few of suchness?
Oh, the some. Remember the other day we were talking about that? There's an absolute. There's a Buddha that already exists.
Oh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's talking suchness is, you know, sometimes used in the Tathagatagarbha teachings to refer to that kind of way of thinking. Yeah.
And about, this may be stupid, but it's a little bit puzzling, because a few verses back we talked about how if you have no understanding, you're not afraid. If you have wisdom, you're afraid. If you have sort of inferential middle, that's frightening. But then we're going on and on about the childish, which are people who, I would think, like me, who don't really have any comprehension at all. It's not the same category of people as the people who are in the middle.
Yeah, that's okay. So it doesn't have to be.
I'm just confused about who we're talking. We're talking about everybody.
Who are we talking about who's afraid of emptiness?
Yeah.
Okay. The people, you know, the people who have an inferential cognition, when they first gain that because of unfamiliarity, they're realizing they have to, their whole notion of themselves is all of a sudden shattered. So emptiness is terrifying for them. Uneducated people, you know, who have some, let's say, belief in an inherently existent self or an Atman or something like that, even just talking about emptiness, even though they don't really have any idea, they don't have an inference of emptiness at all, but even just saying things don't exist the way they appear to you, that frightens them. Or even saying emptiness, people often think, things are empty, that means nothing exists. And so they get freaked out. Not their level of freaked outedness is very different than the other people, because, you know, theirs is an intellectual, much more an intellectual freaked outedness, because they're not really understanding the implications of emptiness. But, you know, it's challenging to their old view, so it freaks them out.
So we're talking about all the ways that emptiness scares
all the different
us.
Ways
all the different ways
to all the different kinds of people,
okay?
You know, who might get freaked out. But if you go and tell, you know, I don't know, I mean, some person at the gas station about emptiness, chances are, you know, unless there's somebody who's thought about, you know, how things exist, they're going to say, so what?
Yeah.
So where is there room in this for seeds being planted for someone to maybe in another life then understand emptiness?
Okay, so where's the room for seeds to be planted when you have faith and confidence in the Buddha? And faith and confidence in karma, law of cause and effect, then, you know, you can hear teachings on emptiness, and you may not understand them, but because you have faith, at least you don't generate the wrong view, or you may have some itty-bitty understanding of them, but again, you know, it doesn't freak you out. And so, in that way, lots of good seeds get planted to realize emptiness in the future. So people who are here, who are listening to the teaching tonight, you don't have to worry about this. You know, you're clearly receptive vessels, because I don't see any of you screaming and, you know, clutching your donka and, you know, saying, my world's falling apart. Okay. So, yeah, don't worry about that.
So then it's interesting that this holiness is teaching emptiness relatively often. For example, in Hamburg, he taught, you say, quite extensively. About
It was very interesting, because many years ago, His Holiness in the West, he didn't teach about emptiness very much. Now he teaches about it a lot. And what was especially interesting in Hamburg is he jumped into chapter 9 of Bodhicharyavatara, teaching about emptiness. And at the same time, he's saying if you believe in God, you know, then, you know, then use that reasoning of believing in God not to do negative actions. And, if, you know, if you want, we're going to generate bodhicitta now. And, you know, even if you're Christian and you believe in God, you can generate bodhicitta. And, you know, you can visualize Jesus or whoever it is. And you generate love and compassion. And so he was saying that stuff. And going on, as he usually does, about don't give up the religion you were born in. And at the same time, teaching emptiness. Yeah? It was fascinating. And nobody was ruffled. Yeah? And he really talked about, you know, faith in God, you know. Like, oh, this is so good if you have faith in God and devotion to God. And he's saying that, and then 10 minutes later he's talking about emptiness. So, you know, either the audience is like really dumb, or...
He's really skillful.
Yeah.
Who was the audience? Was it a university?
No, it was just the public, whoever wanted to come when they sold tickets. Yeah. This is really fascinating. Yeah, to watch how he does this. Yeah?
Cause and effect. When we talk about cause and effect, do we talk about emptiness? Like I talked to a person who was talking, you know, and I talked about cause and effect.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everything comes. You do something and there's an effect.
Effect, yeah.
That doesn't enter into emptiness.
Okay, so when you teach about cause and effect or karma and its effects, does it enter into emptiness? You know, with many people, if you explain cause and effect, their minds don't go to emptiness at all.
Mm.
Not at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's only somebody who's going to be a sharp faculty disciple who thinks if it's dependent arising, it must be empty. You know, it's only going to be, I think, somebody who has heard teachings in this life or who has extremely strong imprints from a previous life who is going to think, oh, cause and effect indicates emptiness. But except for those few rare people, at the beginning, when you hear about cause and effect, most people don't think about emptiness at all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? Their minds are totally immersed in grasping at true existence. Yeah? But it's good that they're learning about cause and effect because in that way they create a lot of merit and avoid creating negativity. And then in the future they can learn. You know, because when you think about that, you know, all the other Buddhist schools assert cause and effect, but they don't even go to think about emptiness due to the thinking about cause and effect.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of shocking, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So they see that the dependent arising is truly existent.
Yeah.
The cause is truly existent and the effect
is truly existent, because if things didn't truly exist, nothing would exist at all, and then cause and effect wouldn't work at all. So for cause and effect to work, things have to have an essence. That's how they think. Yeah. So if even, you know, people, you know, many Buddhist disciples of the lower schools, and these people are not idiots, you know, if even they think like this, then, yeah.
Well, that's how I started.
Yeah.
I mean, to think about karma, I had it totally, this truly existed for me to figure out anything
mm-hmm.
about my ethical conduct.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, when, like last week in the Friday night teachings, when I talked about karma, that first point of karma, that something is called constructive because the causes bring happiness, and something is called destructive karma because the causes, bring unhappiness, and that's the only way things, you know, things are not inherently constructive or destructive, that really is leading into emptiness. Mm-hmm. But many people may not pick up on it. Mm-hmm. Yeah? Because it's saying, you know, good and bad is merely labeled depending upon the results. They're not inherently existent, you know, like thou shalt not inherent things. But on the other hand, cause and effect does work. So you can't say there's no good and there's no bad.
But it seems like in the beginning you do have to go through the dependent arising door first.
Yes.
Before going through the emptiness. It's almost like a process of saying
yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, it, you know, and that's why they say, you know, you don't start new people out on emptiness. Mm-hmm. You start them out, precious human life, everything else, or even if you're starting with the Four Noble Truths, you know, the dependent origination, how you enter into samsara, how you exit from samsara. You always teach, you know, how we went. This was the topic of a previous chapter. Was it chapter 8, you know, or 7? You know, how you always teach about the conventional mm-hmm. as a way of leading into so teaching the about the ultimate. Mm-hmm. You never start with the teachings on the ultimate.
Mm-hmm. It's only after years of putting it in my mind that I can see the brilliance of the Buddha's thinking on how it kind of unfolds.
Yeah.
And how they're totally interconnected.
Right. And it needs a lot of thought. Okay. Mm-hmm. Dedicate.
May the spiritual teachers who lead me on the sacred path, and all spiritual friends who practice it have long life. May I pacify completely all outer and inner hindrances. Grant such inspiration, I pray. May the lives of the venerable spiritual mentors be stable, and their virtuous actions spread in the 10 directions. May the light of Osam's teachings dispelling the darkness of the beings in the three worlds always increase. Idam Guru Ratna Mandalakam Niryatayami. Due to this merit, may we soon attain the awakened state of Guru Buddha, that we may be able to liberate all sentient beings from their suffering. May the precious Bodhi mind, not yet born, arise and grow. May that born have no decline, but increase forevermore. In the snowy mountain pure land, you're the source of good and happiness. Powerful Tenzin Gyatso Chenresi, may you stay until samsara ends. May the deeds of explaining and practicing the Dharma done by groups supporting the teachings and their upholders, who spread the view of dependent arising and nonviolent actions in the 10 directions, and especially Ashravastiya in the west floor.